Welcome to show number 111 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by SportsCardRadio.com. What is going on, everybody? Hopefully you guys are all doing very well out there. Got some interesting things to talk about. We've been talking about sets and having that kind of be the main focus of our show the last maybe couple shows. We had Topps Update come out. We've also had Alabama football, if you're into that. I know we talked about that already. And also Upper Deck Artifacts Hockey came out, I believe, on the 2nd or the 3rd, right around there. So there were some releases, and but, you know, there's kind of a gap here where we've got a week. I know Bowman Chrome Baseball comes out in about a week or so. But really, other than that, we've got a little bit of time here this month. I think maybe maybe the manufacturers time some more releases into that November timeframe and into Black Friday season. And so we'll talk a little bit about that as well as, you know, hey, we've got a break, not a break here. I mean, there's tons of sets. You could Topps Chrome and Panini Momentum and Panini, there was another football set. Prominence Football has been released recently, and you could still go back and get Prestige Basketball. There's all those autographed rookies in there. So there's tons of things to collect. But say you're just up on the new cards and you only have one or two guys or, you know, a couple guys from your favorite team or whatever that you're collecting, you might be feeling like you know, there's a break. And there's gaps during the year for baseball and football and basketball. And certainly hockey, too, when they're in a lockout as well, where you get some gaps where maybe you don't have some things to collect. So we'll talk about it from a collector's perspective and then also from the seller's perspective. Somebody that runs a store or a shop, somebody that is doing box break websites, you know, having people have gaps and maybe get out is not going to be as consistent for you business-wise. So we'll talk about some of the kind of things you can do from both ends as a collector to maybe fill those gaps and find some things to collect or find some things that might help keep you like motivated or at least interested in the hobby until your favorite release comes around the following season. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Related to that is we'll talk I'll just start going right into check out my cards. We talked about it on last show, how they redesigned their website, and a lot of comments on the blog have been relatively positive, but I've also read comments on their blogs where people have said, you know, I'm leaving, I'm selling all my stuff, or once I sell through all my stuff, I'm out because of the raised fees and things of that nature. The one thing I want sellers on there to probably, and everywhere, it doesn't necessarily have to be that site. Everybody raises prices as everything gets more expensive, and inflation is a naturally occurring thing in the universe, as you might say. So things have to get more expensive. So to stay on top of that, they have to raise fees. But in some sense, it could help buyers. And I think most sites like Check Out My Cards and certainly eBay and certainly Amazon, big public companies like that, they get it. They realize what you got to do as an e-commerce site. You have to cater to the buyer. You know, there are plenty of sellers out there. If there's a way to make money, there'll be sellers with drooling mouths chomping at the bit trying to make money. But to find the buyers is a little more – find people that have money in their pockets that they want to openly spend every day, that's a little bit harder to find those kind of people. It's much easier to find somebody that wants to make money than it is somebody that wants to spend their money. So these sites, all they do is cater to the buyer, cater to the buyer, cater to the buyer. Because as long as there's buyers there, there's going to be sellers there. Because if there's plenty of buyers, there's going to be money to be made. So that, keeping that in mind, I think some of the changes that Check Out My Cards made fee-wise relatively pretty much helps the buyer, because you can essentially buy cards, buy 10 million cards off the site and get them shipped to you for $3.99 or whatever. So I think that'll be an effective strategy for them. I think that will attract buyers. If you're on the site, I would just, you know, if you need the money, you got to sell your cards. But I think you want to be patient here. Also, we got Black Friday coming up. I remember last month, I think my busiest time was during the November and even December months and even January. Lots of people get money during Christmas, the Christmas season, and they spend it after Christmas and into January. You have new baseball that releases typically in January or early February, and that gets people excited. They're not necessarily just spending their money on new 2013 Top Series 1. They'll go back and buy the cards from last year because they'll realize, oh, wow, people are paying a dollar for a Yu Darvish second-year card in 2013 when his rookie card last year, which is so oversaturated at this point, is selling for, you know, 30 cents. So those kind of things happen, and you can always hang around on any side. It doesn't necessarily have to be Check Out My Cards. You can be putting your cards on Amazon, and you can be putting your cards on eBay. You can be putting your cards on your own website and those kind of things as well. But just be patient. We've got a great holiday buying season coming up. You don't want to pull out. Now would be like pulling out, I don't know, there's plenty of metaphors out there, but why are you getting your inventory out right before the buy? You know, it's kind of like having a Halloween shop and closing in August. Why you just hang around for one or two more months until your season comes and then close. So just keep an eye on that. In terms of Black Friday preparation, as a seller, you want to be ready. You want to make sure you have all your bubble mailers. You want to make sure you have all your tape, and you want to make sure you have all that prepared, and also your inventory as well. And we'll talk about maybe a little bit of that on our next segment. Couple other things I wanted to talk about was Upper Deck has – I remember hearing about this at the 2011 Industry Summit for the first time. I remember hearing lots of dealers saying, hey, how can I sell boxes that have expired redemptions in it? You know, the customer comes in, pays me $90 for a box, and he opens it up, and it's guaranteed two hits. One of them is a player-worn jersey of a guy that's not in the NFL, and the other is this redemption card for Joe Montana or for, you know, Derek Jeter or something like that, and it's expired. It's 2 years old or whatever. And I've had a quality experience with Upper Deck exchanging. The redemption I had was only about a month old. I think it only expired maybe 3 or 4 weeks after I pulled it. So in those cases, I think there's some leeway there. But a lot of the time you're buying, hey, maybe 2006 SB Authentic Football or something like that. There's boxes of that hanging around, and even 1989. I don't think there's really any redemptions in there. There might be. But that's a frustrating problem, especially when it's a top-name guy like Joe Montana or even anybody. You're just not getting the value that you paid for that box. So Upper Deck on their blog, upperdeckblog.com, you can check that out. And I'll also have a link to this article in the show notes of show number 111. So you can go and check that out if you can't find it directly on their blog. But you'll want to check this out. If you have expired redemptions from Upper Deck, what they're doing is at the National Sports Convention in Baltimore that happened about a month or so ago, or about 2 months ago, I guess now at this point, what they allowed collectors to do was enter a raffle with expired redemptions, and they had 100 prizes from, you know, Tiger Woods autographs, Wayne Gretzky. There were boxes of cards of stuff that had just came out and stuff like that. Lots of different prizes, and they allowed customers to come and give them their expired redemptions, and then they held a raffle where they gave away the 100 prizes, and it seemed pretty popular, and Upper Deck is going to continue that at several other places across the country as the year goes along into this year and then into next year, into 2013. So if you have, first of all, start saving your expired, instead of throwing them away or maybe using them or whatever for other things, save them. Don't scratch them off. I believe they need to be unscratched. So save the expired redemptions, and this is what you can do with them. At the Sports Card and Memorabilia Fall Expo in Toronto, that would be the week of Saturday, November 10th, you can bring them there. The Las Vegas Industry Summit, I'll be there, and that's the week of Monday, March 18th. And also the National Sports Collectors convention. That will be the week of Saturday, August 3rd. That's in 2013. But you can also mail in you don't have to attend the trade shows to participate. Upper Deck has given an address, and you can send up to 5 redemption cards to be eligible for one of the 100 prizes. I don't believe if more than 100 people, so if you can only send in 5 and 20 people send in 5 redemption cards, and you're the 21st person to send in your one, then your odds of winning go down. And what I would maybe encourage collectors to do here is, hey, don't be greedy. Maybe it looks like Upper Deck. This is something I remember, like I said, I heard at 2011 Industry Summit. This was one of the ideas. I think they really should be guaranteeing you something. A raffle, I think this is the step in the right direction. 100, giving away 100 prizes. If less than 100 people send it in, and that's certainly possible, everybody wins, and I think that's great. I think that's what should happen. But this is at least a step in the right direction. They're not playing favorites. They're not playing, oh, you pulled a Joe Montana, so you should get, here's the value of that. Oh, you pulled a, some guy that's out of the league. And you're expecting to get this, or you know, Peter Warwick or something like that. I mean, so it's good. I think they're taking the decision making out of it, making a straight raffle. I would encourage collectors to don't be greedy. Don't send in 5. If you have a stack of 50 of them, I would try to spread out when you sent them in, instead of sending all 50 in at once and trying to stack your either stack your odds or really, you could send in all 50, and if 300 people send it in and you never get drawn, then that strategy didn't work for you. I think sending in just a couple each time, letting as many collectors win as possible, is probably the best bet on here. There's some specific things that you need to write on your redemption card, and also where to send it. And so I encourage you, if you have these expired redemptions, go to the Upper Deck blog, try to find this post. Again, if you can't, I'll have a link for it. And direct your questions to Upper Deck. I'm sure there's ways here as well. You can probably comment in the blog as well. So that's what I wanted to talk about there. Last thing, Industry Summit coming up March, I believe it's the 17th or 18th through the – I think it's the 18th through the 20th. It's a Sunday through, I believe, a Wednesday or something like that. You want to attend. My brother has spoken with the organizer. He wants blog. I remember when I signed up in 2011, I was like, I wonder if these people even want me here. Like, you know, I was like, I wonder if they even want somebody there, like covering it and giving the news and kind of what happens at the event to the people and the collectors that are interested in what happens. And there's also exclusive cards that people are interested in. But the operator of the event, Kevin Isaacson, great guy, wants everybody to attend, wants bloggers to come attend. Really, you know, if you're just a collector and you're just trying to come in there and get your black box cards, stay on eBay and make some connections with people, and you can get your cards that way. It's not really for collectors to come and buy cards and things. That doesn't happen. But if you have a website, or if you have if you're even just a small website where you're selling cards, or you're trying to start a box break website, come to Las Vegas, spend a couple days there. It's real cheap. You can stay at the Orleans is a really fun casino. It's not all uptight and all suited up like the Aria is, or the Cosmopolitan. Even though those are great casinos and a lot of fun, you'll have more fun in the Orleans because you can kind of let it hang loose and let it whoop when you hit a $20 jackpot. So those you got to get to this event, though, especially if you're trying to sell. I think if you're a blogger, it's more of a vacation. You're not going to get thousands of people. Trust me, you're not going to get thousands of people going to your website all of a sudden because you attended the Industry Summit. You might get, 100 people during that week, but after that, if you're not providing any pertinent information to them, they're not going to go to your website anyway. So it's not like It's not like a Boondoggle or something. You go there and all of a sudden you become a world famous webmaster. You got to put in the work, but really it's a great time in Las Vegas. You can have a great time. You can meet some people. You can bet some sports. You can do a lot of things in my state you can't do. So there's a lot of fun stuff that goes on there. And you'll learn a lot. You'll see the angle from the distributors. You'll be like, wow, there's all these distributors out here. There's, you know, a half dozen of them or 8, 9, 10 of them. And they're all selling the same product. And they're all working, you know, basically side by side to try to deliver the product to different areas of the country. And so it's amazing to see it from that angle and the kind of things that they talk about. And it's certainly amazing to hear the ideas and the perspective from hobby shop owners who get it, who are in front of customers on a daily basis and are essentially providing customer service on a daily basis to customers. So you get their perspective as well. And so, and I think it's great. This would be great if you're thinking about opening a card shop, if you're thinking about opening up a box break website. Before you even do it, I think you should go to this event in March, because I think you would go to it and realize, wow, I would have saved all this time, wouldn't have done this, would have had this relationship already, and it would have moved me further. I think if you're in the planning stages now, just stay in the planning stages. The real estate's not going to go up. Certainly commercial real estate is not. They'll tell you on TV, and your real estate agent will tell you all kinds of other stuff, but it's just not true. You can just walk around and do the research yourself. Real estate is not going to go up anytime soon, any significant amount. Interest rates are not going to go up anytime soon. In fact, they're trying to push them down even further. So artificially trying to push them down even further. So you can borrow money for nothing, and you can find a place to rent for nothing probably for the next 18 months at least, until you have to start worried about some kind of inflation in price there. So you're good. You can be in the planning stages. I strongly encourage everybody to attend this event that has any kind of either media presence in the hobby, or certainly if you're trying to make money buying and selling stuff, this is where you'll learn a bunch of stuff and talk to people and make relationships and get product probably not necessarily cheaper, but you'll just have more outlets to buy it. You'll have more relationships. They'll know who you are. So if they do get special deals, or if they are familiar with the kind of products that sell at your place, they'll hook you up. Well, folks, that hooks it up for the first segment. When we come back, it's all going to be kind of like taking a break, or really from the hobby shop owner and stuff like that, how to sell. How to sell a customer, and it's also us as collectors. How do we sell ourselves on when there's a gap in the hobby where, oh, I don't want to collect this product, or, oh, you know, my rookies, you know, Andy Dalton and AJ Green, they're a little expensive right now. What am I going to, you know, pay $100 for the guy's rookie autograph? That seems a little expensive to me. So it's not that I'm sour on my team. It's not that I don't want to collect my team. It's just, it might be out of my budget or out of my range. So what does someone like me do? I'm sure some of you are out there. If you're Trent Richardson, he's been running the ball good. If you're a fan of Robert Griffin, if you were like, oh, I'm going to buy a bunch of Robert Griffin III cards, well, if you're not got a doctor's salary, chances are you're buying a lot of base. So what do you do in those situations? And also, what do you do as a hobby store owner, and also maybe like a box break website and box selling website? What do you do in those spots to help collectors along, move them into making some more purchases and staying in the hobby? We'll talk about that right after this. And I'm just a devil with love to spare. So viva Las Vegas, viva Las Vegas. How I wish that there were more than the 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more. And we are back. Before I talk about some of the things we can do as collectors and as like sellers to collectors, when there's a break or we seem unmotivated or we don't want to collect any of the cards that are out or whatever, some of the things we can do to stay motivated and get people motivated. Before I talk about that, I just talked about the industry summit. I want to remind you, if it's your first time, if you've never been before, most distributors like Magazine Exchange and All Sports Marketing, and because I don't buy from them, they're all slipping off my head. I think GTS Marketing, there's another one that I'm totally forgetting about right now. They're all out there. You can even go to my website. I have a little link on my homepage down at the bottom. I also have a little sidebar banner that sometimes shows up of a list of all of them. And you can sign up, and I think it's about $300 to attend the summit if you get and get in there before the early bird, because I think it goes up to closer to $400. So get in there. I don't know the stipulations. You want to call them, because I always pay my own way, but I know that a lot of people go for their first time comped by these by a distributor that gets them there, and the reason why they do that, because it works. They get you there, you get a lot of ideas. Like I said, this is something you want to do, even if you're just in the thinking in the beginning stages of starting your store, or if you don't have a website and don't have a retail spot and nothing, but that's what you want to do. This is where you want to go to get some ideas, see other people that are already doing it, and they'll tell you everything that you need to know. So on to now, once you maybe move past that stage, or just a lot of you guys that listen are probably just collectors. You have no interest in selling. You have boxes of cards, or you have your nice collection, or you have cards stored wherever it might be. You know, all you care about is what's new, or going to continue your collection, or maybe saving up some money, or what you're trying to spend your money on. And hey, maybe it's like, oh, I'm unmotivated. Hey, maybe my team is like, maybe like the Patriots, where it's like, you got Tom Brady, maybe you've already got all, you spent all your money on his rookies and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe some of their younger players aren't really catching your eye that much. So, there's lots of situations out there. Maybe you're a baseball fan and your team's out of it now. Maybe your team's, you know, like the Rockies or something like that. And they, you know, they have some good young players, but season's pretty much over. So what can you do from now until the start of next year? Well, some of the things that I do personally is go vintage. Like vintage is like gold. Like it's kind of like investing in gold, or investing in terms of a stock market parallel, it's like investing in gold, or it's like investing in bonds, like treasuries and like even like municipal debt or whatever. Not really that entertaining. Not a lot. I mean, there are some people that really get entertained. There's people making billions of, but that's like people make tons of money kind of in like the fixed income market. So, but that's really what I kind of look at as like vintage is. These guys aren't playing anymore. And when I say vintage, I mean it gets like newer, I guess. You can bump the generation up as years go on. But really when I think of vintage in baseball, I think anything pre-1970-ish, certainly anything in the 60s and before that, anything 69 and before is certainly I would consider vintage, certainly anything in that range. Basketball, you're talking about anything 1986-ish and back. And in football, I'm not as familiar with football. I don't buy a whole lot of vintage football, and that's maybe one market I probably should get into. But I would say probably in football, it's probably almost very similar to baseball. It's in the 70s. Well, maybe starting around Joe Montana, the Joe Montana rookie year. Can't remember when that is. It's like 81 or something like that. That might be in the range there. So, but vintage, it's all about condition. These guys aren't playing anymore. These guys aren't hitting home runs anymore. Guys aren't cheating on their wives and getting busted in a club at 2 a.m. anymore. So there's not much upside, and that's not much downside. That's why I talk about them in terms of treasuries, although in bonds, although you can see probably very shortly, you'll see bigger moves in price there. You usually see very incremental changes in terms of price and then interest rates and stuff like that. Not necessarily in the last 4 years, but typically, historically, that's what happens. And same with vintage. Yeah, maybe the Mickey Mantles, the high-end Mickey Mantles, and that I can't remember, the Hannes Wagner cards and stuff like that. Yeah, you might have collectors pay premiums for very, very rare vintage cards, but just the average guy in the set, PSA 7 or BGS 8 or whatever, all relatively the same in value, but slightly heading in an uptrend as the years go on, because I think collectors come into these cards and collectors want to amass more of them. I know that a lot of the collectors in vintage tend to be older people because they remember those. They remember collecting those cards. And then as people my age, and I'm older too, but 30, but say 30 years from now when I'm 60, I'll probably think very fondly of 2011 cards and 2009-10 National Treasures basketball or whatever. I'll think very highly of those cards. However, in my mind too is I'll be like, oh, I remember my dad collected the Babe Ruths. Oh, I remember my, you know, and down the line it's like I remember my grandpa collected the Mickey Mantles. I remember my great uncle collected the 1960s top sets PSA graded. So it's something that'll continue to get passed down. And I think just the further and further you go out, people just put a premium on the cards, the farther and out you go. So I think it's a really safe investment. It's something that you can buy if you buy it right. Now, you'll see just a random baseball player that none of us have probably ever heard of. He might have only played, you know, one season in the major leagues, and he had randomly had a baseball card, because they did 600, 700 card sets back in those days of probably virtually every player that made an appearance. So you'll find cards like that, you know, maybe graded PSA 8 will sell for $26 one day, and then maybe a couple weeks later will sell for $19.95. Maybe some days someone really buys it well at $15, but then some other days it goes back up to that $25-$26 range. So there's sometimes a $10 gap in there, and you always want to make sure you're on the low end. Buying at that top price, that $25 price, sure, I don't think you're really necessarily getting ripped off, but you're giving yourself no room for upside there. You're going to have to wait a long – that card's not going to go up to $50 anytime soon. It will over maybe a 10-year, 15-year period, maybe. But chances are you're going to have to wait a while. But however, if you buy it at that low price, if you're buying it down at $15, you're certainly over 10 years. I think over 15 years, you're giving yourself plenty of room for upside, where you could easily sell that card for $20, $25, $30 and be good. And my point there is with vintage, I consider it more of a safe investment if you buy it at that low, if you can find them at that low price, and wait until typically on eBay, if there's only one or two of them and people need them for their sets, the card's going to go for more. But you'll see large collections get put on there. You'll see multiple people doing it at the same time, and you'll have your choice between three or four or five different PSA 8s. It also depends on what day the auctions end, so you can be on there on a Monday or on a Sunday night football game, or during a time when maybe people are away from their computers, like at work during the mid-afternoon. Maybe some auctions are ending there. That's how you can get in there and sometimes buy things at the right price. But with vintage, go in there, do a little price research first, set your budget, because like I said, these cards aren't necessarily going up or down for any other reason that people are either overpaying or getting a good deal. So that's one way. Buying lots, you can buy big bulk lots on eBay. You see them, lots of them are pretty junky, but you do see the ones where it's like you get 100 cards and you get this cut autograph and he has pictures of it all, and those are the ones you want to buy, where it's pictures and list of everything you get. Those ones where it's like they show you 9 cards and you're gonna get 9 jersey cards, those are all a ripoff pretty much. But the ones where he explains exactly what you get and says, hey, I'm just selling all this, those are the decent ones to get. Typically you're gonna have to pay a lot of money, but I think buying in that bulk is sometimes kind of fun, because it's almost like buying packs, because you'll look at the auction and yeah, maybe you'll go through most of the cards, but then once you buy it, you're still anticipating getting that package in the mail. And then once it arrives, it's almost like opening a box where every card is a hit. you'll remember the big hits from the auction probably, but you'll be like, oh wow, yeah, that card's in there, that card, oh nice. I think that's sometimes fun. I haven't done that in a while. I used to do that a long time ago, back in maybe like 03, 04, somewhere in that range. I used to do it a little bit more then. I thought the deals back then on eBay were a little bit better, and there were also more products back then, and so you had more more opportunities to get jersey cards back then, and there were more dumps of products where you'd have products come to market and then they didn't sell well, and because the company was competing against all these other brands that were coming out different every week, they had to dump the product sometimes for nothing, you know, half of whatever the wholesale cost was. So you'd have a lot of rip and flips and a lot of stuff out there. So I think there was more of that going on a few years ago, but you could still see it today, certainly. Another thing is trades. You don't necessarily have to buy cards all the time. You can get in there and trade. Maybe you've got some cards that you're just like me. It's like, eBay. It's like, man, you got to scan it, and then I got to list it, and then I got to wait for it to end. Then I got to hope the guy pays, because everything – I usually just sell video games now. I'll buy a video game. I'll play it for a couple weeks or whenever I have time, and if I get bored – and I don't feel like playing anymore, I'll just list on eBay. You usually get like $30 or $40. It's better than it just sitting here and depreciating and turning into, you know, 10 bucks. So I try to sell them before they go out of style. Almost 100%, I'd probably say 75% of the time, the first person that buys it doesn't pay. It's always somebody with no feedback or with 10 feedback, and they haven't bought anything in 4 years. And I always get the email, my son got on my computer and bid. It's like, man, if your son's getting on eBay and bidding, what the hell else is he doing on your computer? And what else are you not monitoring him doing? I guarantee you, go through his top drawer of his underwear and see what you find in there. So there's lots of frustration things about eBay. So I don't remember where I was going with that. But, oh, yeah, trades. Good thing I've written down here. Trades. So, hey, I know it can be frustrating with trades. I encourage you to never trade anything of really, really tangible value unless you know the guy really well, unless he's almost like a friend of yours. And always do insurance. Anything high dollar value, always do insurance. Pay whatever, dollar, whatever he charges you, $275, anything. It doesn't matter. If the card's worth $150, $200, I actually just sent some cards out. We had a charity break. I had somebody really generous, generously bid on teams, and literally really very generously bid on teams. And won some decent cards. And I 100% sent them the cards, and they didn't get them. And actually, I've done breaks with him in the past and sent him cards, and I know he's gotten them. And he doesn't get them. And it's like, gosh, you know, I probably should have had insurance. I probably should have done tracking. Did neither. But in this case, I don't mind because it was a charity break and we raised a lot of money already. I didn't mind sending his money back. But if you were a seller – and that you had to wipe that transaction out, that could make a month, that could make a week from being a profitable week to a losing week. Because that could have been, you know, 70, 80 bucks in 1 week could have been your whole profit. Because if you're making 80 bucks profit in a week, you're looking at close to $400 a month. That's nothing to be like, that's nothing to be ashamed of. But if every week you're having a $60 charge wiped off, that's something that kind of sucks. I don't know where I was really going with that, but that's just a warning for all you sellers out there. You can get into trades and do those kind of things. I think that's kind of fun, but just like I said, be careful with who you're trading with and where you trade and those kind of things. But I think it's kind of fun to do a lot of – I do a lot of like low dollar trades. People will say, hey, I need these cards for my set. And it's like, oh, yeah, I got those. I'll send them to you. And I'm often like, whatever you send me back, I'll just send them to you and then, you know, pull 5 cards out of a box and send them to me. That's kind of how I like to do trades. And last thing is auto memorabilia and like man cave stuff. Instead of like cards that typically don't present well, and I think people typically forget that maybe there's a heightened – some people maybe put – too heightened a value on like especially rare cards and they want like a value on them or something and they put a big premium on it and they put it over and above say like a jersey signed on the wall. Like I've seen people want more for an autographed Michael Jordan card than what it costs for an authentic – jersey hung up on the wall signed by him too. Trust me, collectors are sophisticated. Yeah, they will pay more for certain rare cards, but in the end, most average guys would rather have the thing you can present well, and that's auto memorabilia, stuff you can hang on your walls, and things of that nature. Just be careful buying that. There's lots of fake stuff out there. You do not want to buy a fake autograph. Just whatever you pay for it, it just would not be worth it. So just be careful there. LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, these kind of athletes are locked up with companies, Upper Deck, Panini, those kind of people. So those are the people that you want to buy those kind of memorabilia from. Don't buy it off the street. Don't buy it from somebody else that says it's authentic or has some paperwork. That's not going to work. These guys get Blake Griffin and all those guys get paid big money from these companies to only sign for them. So they are not doing autograph signings typically. They usually roll 20 deep, and so it's hard to get in touch with them anyways, even if you see them on the street. So be careful there. But I have lots of fun looking at that stuff. It's sometimes a little often out of my price range, but it's fun seeing, hey, oh man, it'd be sweet to have an Andy Dalton helmet. It'd be sweet to have AJ Green signed jersey or whatever. So let's move on quickly. This show's gone on a lot longer. Man, I must talk about lots of stuff I guess I didn't plan on in this show. Hopefully I haven't rambled on too much. We'll try to tighten it up here right in the last 5 minutes here. As a shop owner and a box break, quickly. As a shop owner, to sell your customers, if they're bored, if they're coming in and they're not buying anything, they're like, oh, you got the same stuff as last week. The main thing is to be friends and have a conversation and have them be almost basically become your friends. That's the one thing I miss about my store. That's the only thing I miss about my store. All the bills and having to be there hour after hour. I don't miss any of that. Believe me, having to buy the product and having to make sure it's in there and pricing it. I don't miss any of that I don't miss it for a second. The one thing that I miss and will always miss is the people that came in almost daily, or I could always expect them to come in on a Monday or come in on Sunday and come in and talk for literally like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Sometimes they would stay way longer than they thought they would, and we would just sit there and talk and watch ESPN or watch a baseball game that was on. That's the key to building long-term customers and long-term relationships and getting them through the dry spell. So they'll come in, they won't buy anything. Make them feel comfortable about that. I've always felt that I wanted people to come in and felt like they didn't have to. If I had the same stuff as last week, you don't have to buy anything. Just come in, let's talk a little bit. It'll get them to come back next time, and that definitely worked. Another thing is having something out on the counter, dollar packs, $2 packs or whatever, or something out on the counter. Grab bags and those little brown bags where each one had some value in there. I threw coupons in there. I thought that was a great promotion. I would have grab bags, and then in every third one, I had a dollar off a pack or a dollar off a base or a dollar off anything in the store. And kids like that because then they would turn around and get another one, or turn around and get a card, or turn around and get another pack or something. And I think that worked. And the last thing is pre-sell. That worked very well in my store too. I'd have people come in and they'd be like, oh, I don't want this. Or they'd be like, oftentimes they're always asking for opinion. Should I buy this? Should I buy this? And I'd always be honest with them. And I think people appreciate that. If they were like, should I buy that on your shelf? And oftentimes I'd be like, for you, I wouldn't recommend the product I have right here that I can make a sale. But in a week, there's this product coming out, or in 2 weeks, there's this product coming out, and I would get them to pre-sell and maybe put $10 down or $20. Sometimes they would pay more than what they were about to pay, so you could actually take in more money and make them happy, make them feel like, hey, I'm not going to sell you this that I have on my shelf right now. I don't think that's right for you, or there's only two packs in there, and hey, I'll be honest with you, the hit's gone. So those are the kind of things you can do for really good customers as a shop owner, and I think it works. As a box break, I see lots of box break websites because I think the profit margins are a lot bigger here. The spread is a lot bigger here in terms of what you can make. Although the time invested is a lot more. I don't think a lot of people realize that. They say, oh, cool, I can make $100 chopping out this box on a box break. But you got to sit there and package it all out. You got to make sure you have all the supplies. You got to, I mean, that takes a lot. I'm literally, I did a box break on like the 14th of last month, I think it was. Might have even been before that. I'm literally just now getting to it all. And I have two people that are getting involved in my next charity break that I'm probably just going to hold on to theirs and then send them out at that time. So I have some very, very loyal listeners, and they know who they are, that are very patient in terms of if I was a store, they would be on Yelp giving me 1-star reviews in terms of my shipping time. But I consider them friends, and so I think they understand. But as a box break website, you don't want to do that unless you really consider them friends. And that's another thing I've written down here, is try to build relationships. I have Doug and Dan at Mojo Break, because we spent some time in Las Vegas. We went to a casino. I remember gambling roulette with them my last night there. I remember we literally stayed up all night because we had an early morning flight. And my friend was drinking a lot, so I was kind of keeping an eye on him. But I remember doing roulette, and we were calling out baseball team numbers. And so I remember having a lot of fun with them. And so I go to their website and buy a box break here and there, mainly because of that, because I consider them a friend. And, you know, who cares if I get any, I've gotten good stuff there, good cards every once in a while. And, hey, that's great. But that's not necessarily why I'm always doing it. The cheaper... And I think there's lots of customers out there like me. So I encourage anybody out there with any kind of store. There's lots of customers out there like me that even have more money than me that are willing to spend $5-$10 here and there, no problem, if they know it's helping you out. So, or if they just know that it's just fun to be a part of. I like the box breaks too, because they're live and you can get in there and you can chat with people and see like what other people, like I was involved in a break where I think the teams weren't that expensive. The Colts might have been, but somebody pulled like Andrew Luck out of like 300. So I thought that was like autographed rookie. I don't know what it might have been out of less than that, but I thought it was like, that's a sick hit out of you probably only paid maybe max like $30 or $40 for the spot. So I thought that was pretty cool. And also, last thing, we'll close it out after this. As a box break website, the cheaper and randomized too. If somebody's frustrated with their team, or teams aren't consistently selling because you don't have those fan base inside, randomize and do stuff like that, or sell the last ones as a randomized spot or something like that. Figure out a creative way to get people involved for a very low price. And that's always, that's a tactic that like casinos use. They'll give you the free room. Is it free to give you the room? Heck no. You know, they got to pay a maid to go in there and clean it all out and to press all those sheets and to have the HD TV in there and to have it all vacuumed up. That's not magically free. They don't magically just have to not pay their workers. But they're drawing you in for other reasons, obviously. The casino is much more obvious. But with a box break website, your payoff is not going to be someone instantly going and pulling a slot machine. But you can see the kind of marketing tactics out there that other people use, and they certainly work. They add value to – they give the best marketing tactics that work, and maybe tactics is kind of a strong word. The best marketing techniques maybe that work are one that provide value to the customer. The customer goes away feeling, hey, that was great. You know, I got a deal. I feel great. And then you feel great. Either you broke even, which is okay in some cases. Obviously, you're not in business to break even. But a small percentage of the time, that's okay if you feel like you've acquired that customer as a paying customer later, and they'll come back and pay for you later. So that wraps it up today, folks. I'm kind of tired. Ooh, we just got past Thursday football and the Rams. That's the one last thing. Well, one last football insight. Those kind of games are like sucker bet games. I think Arizona was favored. They were undefeated. And going into that game, I actually picked up St. Louis's D in a league I needed a defense for. And it was a bigger league. I think it might have been maybe more than 10 teams. So I needed a D, and they were like one of the only ones out there. And I was like thinking about it, man, it's in St. Louis. That's their Super Bowl. You know, St. Louis isn't on Monday Night Football every week. They aren't getting to play, the primetime matchup. That's that team's Super Bowl. And Arizona's got to fly, not that far, but they got to fly and get into town, and they've had some attention being undefeated or whatever. And they've had some attention on their team, so they might not be as fired up. But I knew that St. Louis would definitely be fired up. So those are the sucker bets that I listen to, like, betting podcasts. They talk about that kind of stuff all the time. It's like, hey, this is this team's Super Bowl, man. They're on TV. They're at home. It's sold out. All their friends are going to be there. So those are the kind of things you want to think about as you make your fantasy moves. A little fantasy. What? I mean, this is the sports card show, and we're giving you fantasy advice to close things out. What the heck are we doing? That means we better get out of here. Hopefully you've enjoyed today's show. We'll be back shortly, probably after this week's football. It looks like I'm doing these like every 4 days. See, I get the motivation right now to do these every like 4 days or so, or every 4 or 5 days. So you can expect another one here shortly. Get in contact with me anytime, sportscardshow@gmail.com. I am doing a pretty darn good staying up on my emails. If I don't respond to you, send it back to me. Just be like, yo, I sent this to me last week. Hook me up. So do that at Sports Card Radio on Twitter. And hey, that's about it. Thanks for tuning in today, folks. Hopefully you guys are all doing well out there. Good luck with your fantasy teams. Good luck with if your teams are in the baseball playoffs. Good luck to your hockey guys. Hopefully you guys get it all worked out and you guys have a season. Get ready for the NBA. We'll be doing, and that's one last thing, we'll be doing NBA previews. I'll go down probably each division or each conference as we lead up to the NBA season. So all you NBA haters, you have that to look forward to as well. We are out of here.